Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, and this is Carl from Carl's Cavern. Nice you could join us tonight. First off, I'd like to introduce the voice of God, a.k.a. my producer, which would be Doc. Say hello, Doc.
I'm not that, hi, everybody. I'm not that good, but I am the producer.
And today I'd like to welcome our guest. Our guest is George Rother, a.k.a. the movie guy. Say hello, George.
Hello, George.
Guest after my own heart. Bad jokes, always a good
actually,
thing.
Actually, my name is pronounced Rother, R-O-T-H-E-R, Rother, and I am movie guy 24/7.
Yeah, Rother, okay, bad Carl. Remember pronunciation, bad Carl. Okay.
No cheese, Carl, no cheese.
No cheese for me tonight. Okay, George, you're the movie guy, so tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I am a big movie fan. I have movies on the mind 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, hence the moniker Movie Guy 24/7. I've always loved movies. I was that oddball kid in class who didn't really care so much about Star Wars. He wanted to see Kramer versus Kramer, The Rose, and all that jazz. And, of course, you know, most of those were off limits to 11-year-old movie guy because of the ever-present R-rated movie parental block. So as a teen, I found myself spending a lot of time at the movies. I would always read up on them, get as many books as I could, and, you know, I guess by the time I was in high school, I just kind of knew more about it than anyone else my age. And, well, you know, I did the usual route. I went to college. I held this job, that job. Didn't really stay in one place too long. And then I got my calling, so to speak. I was working another job. I was working an overnight shift at one of those shopping clubs where you need a membership.
Right.
And I had health problems, so I had to go on sick leave. So my wife Donna, who I love, she decided that instead of sitting around all day doing nothing, that she and our friend were going to set me up a website so I could review movies, something that I have always wanted to do, but was always a little afraid to throw my hat in the ring. You know, I mean, a lot of competition, hard to get job, whatever. So they set up this website for me, and Movie Guy 24/7 as a website. It was born, actually, on my birthday, December 8th of 2010. Of course, I was born long before 2010, but we share the same birthday. So it's been up and running for a little more than 8 years. I get a lot of activity on the Facebook page, and it's just been something I've been doing. I review movies, and on my Facebook page, I put a lot of trivia and fun kind of movie stuff for people to take part in. It's very interactive. And, well, that brings me up today where I'm sitting here talking to you on your show and very proud to be.
Well, thank you very much. So I thought with that introduction, I should maybe give you a little bit of information. I grew up and came of age in the 70s. And my family bought a music store in Bradford, Pennsylvania. And one of our customers was the projectionist at the local drive-in and said, hey, I could use your son to do this and that and to do some things around the projection booth, and would you be okay with that? And they said yes, and then the second week we were there, it was Blood Freak. let's see, what else? But he was an independent, so he did a lot of this old Herschel Gordon Lewis stuff and things like that. In the meanwhile, we were one of the people with early HBO, so, you know, art films, blaxploitation, and I was basically an avid reader and loved films. I grew up being a kid and watched Chiller Theater in Pittsburgh with Chili Billy Cardelli and of course, George Romero and all those things. And so, yeah, I've always had a great love of film. So that's me, and I basically just stumbled into doing podcasting about 6 years ago. So, and And Doc, how about you? How do you like your movie?
Well, I've always been a movie fan. When I was a little kid, I would go to the movie theater to get absolutely terrorized by, you know, Rainbow Bright and the Star Stealers and Care Bears.
I'd be scared, too, if I was watching that.
I'll tell you, I was born in 1980, so, you know, I did The Land Before Time and all that. Oh, my God. But I mostly got into horror films, offbeat stuff, really exploitation, all sorts of crazy stuff that, honestly, you wouldn't expect. It all came from my mom, believe it or not. We had a family tragedy, and my mom kind of basically brought home a bag of movies and said, take a look at these, you'll like them, maybe you'll find a hobby. And the bag contained Gorgo, The Night of the Living Dead, and The Terror of Boris Karloff. And that's what started my monster movie horror room fandom. And through the magic of internet and finding friends who liked the same type of movies throughout college, I was able to get my hands on some pretty awesome movies and going to conventions and just amassing a pretty decent sized collection throughout the years. That's how I became quite the movie fan. And my friends in college, oh brother, I tormented them with some of the worst films ever, and we loved it. Like Cannibal the Musical. There's still my friends after that one, so don't worry. But yeah, we had many, many movie nights. So
I'm no stranger to that. I think I've inflicted some bad movies on some of my friends, and, well, some of them are still my friends, so I guess it shows that they're my real friends, I guess. But
yeah.
I seem to remember in the 80s, I inflicted Sleepaway Camp and Death Race 2000 on a group of friends. I love
that
those, but they're like, George, those are bad movies. I'm like, which is exactly the point.
Well, you know what? I think there's a difference between camp, which both of those I put into the camp category as opposed to bad movies. I love Death Race 2000. I adore it. Plus, also, I'm a huge Mary Warnoff fan, you know.
Which she made with Paul Bartel?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
That's terrible.
And the other thing, too, is that, you know, there's a difference between those films and something like my beloved Blood Freak. Guy has drugs, eats turkey, and then turns into a turkey monster, you know, which is, I think, the perfect Thanksgiving movie for every year. You know, there's a difference between those, you know. But yeah, it's you know, the thing about movies is they're certainly they reflect your personal taste, the ones you love, but also they can change you, and they can change a mood and make you happy or reflective or whatever. And so what I thought we would do today would be, we have just bought a theater. We put all our money together. We've got a theater now, and we get to do double features. So I don't know how you guys did it, but I sort of, as I was going through this, I put together like two movies that have a theme or something in common, right? So I'll start off here. And the other thing is, we're doing this, and they're going to be obscure. So, you know, as you're listening, guys out there in radio land, you might want to take some notes, because these are, at least the ones that I picked, aren't as well known, but I will guarantee you that anything that I picked, I'd stand behind. They're good movies. So should I start, or do one of you two start? Why don't you start, George?
Me?
You're on.
Okay. All right. Well, you gave me an interesting challenge, Carl. You told me to come up with obscure movies, things that people have never heard of. And, well, you know, it's like, okay, well, maybe it's not so much of a challenge because I really have seen some obscure movies. I mean, I'm the type that, yeah, if it sounds garbagey, I'll probably watch it. But, so I gave it some thought, thought about it quite some time, and actually I put the final touches on it this afternoon when I got home, made my final decisions. So what I'm going to start with is my 80s grindhouse double feature, Vigilantes. So the first picture would be the movie Vigilante, 1983, directed by William Lustig, starring Fred the Hammer Williamson, Robert Forster, and a friend of mine, Rutanya Alda. And that's it's a good picture. Basically, a man is forced. A man faces injustice. His wife is raped and his child is killed, and the justice system fails him, so he joins a gang of vigilantes. It's pretty cool. Now, I would double feature that with a very obscure B movie by the name of Sudden Death. Not the movie with Jean-Claude Van Damme. No, this is a B title from 1985. It stars a couple of actors by the names of Denise Coward and Frank Runyon. And in it, it's a female vigilante who springs into action after she gets raped, and she goes after all these rapists. So I haven't seen it in years. I have it on VHS, but since I don't have a VCR anymore, it's really hard to play it, but I'm hoping. Anyway, that would be my first double feature, Vigilante and Sudden Death.
So, Doc, do you know either of those films?
I've heard of Vigilante. I have heard of the Van Damme version of Sudden Death, but not the one that George is speaking of here. So,
okay.
Two different movies.
Yeah, there are two different films. For me, I'm a huge fan of Vigilante. I'm a big fan of Robert Forster. I think he's one of the most underused, at least, you know, until Jackie Brown.
He was fantastic in Jackie Brown.
He was absolutely fantastic in Jackie Brown. But he's always been a big, I've been a big fan and that. And that's a great film. And William Lustig is someone I'd like to get on the podcast at one point. He's a fantastic director. He also did a lot of work with one of my favorite people, which is, Larry Cohen. Larry Cohen.
Larry Cohen, yes.
And he also, Lustig also did, is behind Blue Underground, the releasing company. So, yeah. Now, Sudden Death, I've heard of, but that's all I can tell you. That's a little past my drive-in time. So, yeah, that one I've heard of, but I don't know it. So I can't say much. So you did good on the obscure. There's one we don't know.
Thank you.
So, Doc, I'm going to pass it to you now.
Okay. I really would like to see more of Ed Wood's off-kilter end-of-career type films being shown a bit more. I actually, two of these are kind of interchangeable because I would actually love to see Necromancy, which I've never seen before. But I have seen Orgy of the Dead and 1 Million Years AC/DC. I think those two would be a really kicking combo to see in the theater. So definitely Orgy of the Dead or Necromancy and 1 Million Years AC/DC.
Okay, Orgy of the Dead is awful. It's horrid.
I know.
It's just, gives me headaches. And AC/DC is pretty odd. You done good.
Yeah.
Do you know either of those,
thank
George?
I've seen Orgy of the Dead a couple of times. It is truly heinous. And congratulations, Doc. You've stumped me on the other. 1 Million Years AC/DC. I don't know
what?
The movie.
1 Million Years AC/DC is a sort of, well, softcore, pornish, caveman and cave girl flick that involves a really, really, really bad monkey a giant, a large
bad monkey, monkey, bad monkey in the corner.
Yeah,
you got
and
to make him.
It's pretty much. We have, it's a really weird little movie. Ed Wood was mostly drunk with vodka. I heard a story specifically that Ed Wood was in the editing booth, drunk out of his mind on vodka, and trying to edit this thing. And it's actually kind of hard to find right now because of it's an older Something Weird video release, and it's kind of out of print at the current time. So it's kind of hard to find. And I have a copy of it, and I would love to share the badness with everybody.
Well, you know, that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to put a little bit of spotlight on films you don't know. I think I'm going to get into, now the 70s were my decade, and there's so many, I think there are so many little gems and unknown films in the 70s. And the first one I'm going to do is a double feature of gangster movies or, you know, that type of thing. But in the 70s, it wasn't, you know, Al Pacino, you know, say hello to my little friend. No, they generally focused on the lower level people. And there are two little films that I love that aren't well known. One is called The Stoolie. And that one stars comedian Jackie Vernon as a low-level mob guy who steals money from his higher up and thinks he's going to make it and retire in Miami, and everything goes wrong. Of course, it's a 70s movie, so everything does go wrong generally. And that is directed by John Avildsen before he did Rocky. Okay, and it is available on YouTube, and the ISF Incredibly Strange Films, we have a playlist on YouTube, and it's there. So if you want to watch it, it's there. The second of the double feature is one of my favorite 70s films. A little-known film called The Nickel Ride, which stars Jason Miller, and Bo Hopkins is in it, John Hillerman, Linda Haynes, and it's just this really, it's about this guy that runs these warehouses for the mob, and he starts getting pressure from people because a specific deal he's trying to get is not coming through. And it's a great little movie, great little character study. And Jason Miller's just freaking fantastic in it. But that's a double feature I would do at a theater. Now, do you guys know either one of those films?
I'm looking them
up
as we speak. I think I've heard of The Nickel Ride, but The Stoolie, I think it may have stumped me on that one, too.
Yeah. Again, I was very lucky growing up because HBO would run all these films. And, of course, at the time, you know, they wanted products. So they'd buy everything and play everything. And it was great. You know, The Nickel Ride is out on, or was out on a DVD, a double DVD from MGM with 99 and 44 100% Dead, which is a John Frankenheimer film, which I really like too. But it's a good double feature, trust me. Doc, do you know either of those?
No, I don't. I've not heard of those.
I think because I talk about them. That's about it.
Yep.
Okay, so far, what do you guys think? Are we being obscure enough, or do we need to get more obscure?
Oh, I think we're being obscure, but who knows? I like a good challenge. Maybe I can come up with more obscure stuff.
Okay. Cool.
Excellent.
So, Doc, why don't you start this one? Then we'll go to George.
All right. Well, I've got a kaiju triple feature because one of them is actually fairly short. Back in the late 60s, early 70s, there was a double bill of Godzilla's Revenge and War of the Gargantuas. I know this because I was given a replica poster of the original release poster. And there was a little-known TV movie in Japan called Agon the Atomic Dragon. It's basically like a cheapy version of Godzilla, but it's so kind of out of nowhere. And you look at it and you're like, I cannot believe this was actually put together. It's really an interesting little flick. I could not give you any names of anybody who was involved with it. Couldn't really find too much information. But it's in black and white, and it's kind of... It's really neat. It's got some really good music, decent special effects. Agon is one of the most silliest-looking monsters I've seen in quite a while, but they tried, you know.
Cool. So the triple feature is... Okay, give me the triple feature again, Doc.
It's all Godzilla's three. Revenge. Yep, Godzilla's Revenge, which a lot of people have seen and do not like, but it shows an interesting side of Japanese society when it comes to latchkey kids, and War of the Gargantuas.
Yeah, that one I know. I know Gargantuas. That's a fun movie. That's a fun film. Yeah, for everyone that's listening, and for George too, when you talk kaiju and Doc, it's a marriage made in heaven. That's his big thing.
Yeah.
That's one of his really big things.
I'm liking what he's choosing. I'm making a mental list as we speak of movies that I should really see.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Yep.
Well,
and
you know, that's sort of the idea here. Go ahead, Doc. Sorry, man.
No problem. You can find Agon, the Atomic Dragon, on YouTube. So definitely check that out. And there's also a monster whale film. I can't pronounce Japanese, but it's also, if you look up Agon Atomic Dragon, the monster whale movie will come up in two parts right in the search bar. So that's definitely one to check out too. But that's just for a little side feature to, you know, just some, so we don't do too many movies in one night.
Well, you can't do too many movies a night as far as I'm concerned. You know,
yep.
That's me. Okay, George, it's your turn.
Oh, okay. Well, let me just finish writing something down. The nickel.
Oh,
ride.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. I'm just jotting them down. Okay. For my next double feature, this double feature would focus on the director, Abel Ferrara, who's probably best known for directing the Harvey Keitel movie Bad Lieutenant in 1992.
Love him.
Well, that is not part of my double feature. That's simply the movie I think he's best known for. Now, the pictures I would select are two of his earlier movies. The first one is another female vigilante picture called Ms. 45 from 1981. And in it, a woman is raped not once, but twice in the same night. And she's mute. I forgot to mention that. She's mute. She doesn't have the power of speech. But these two rapes, they really mess her up. So, again, she goes on a killing spree, first going after rapists, then guys that she thinks that are rapists. By the end, it's clear that she's really lost her mind. She's going crazy. It's a really cool movie. The other one I would choose is a movie called Fear City, which stars Tom Berenger, Jack Scalia, Melanie Griffith, Ray Dawn Chong, and Billy Dee Williams. And it's kind of a cop movie. There's a serial killer terrorizing Times Square. He's killing strippers. And this nightclub owner, who is a former boxer, he finds himself, you know, involved. I think he gets accused of it. Billy Dee Williams is the cop on the case. And, excuse me. It's really good. The killer, well, he's a crazy guy. And in between killings, he writes about them in his book, and he writes in blood. So it's really quite a movie. Ms. 45 and Fear City, that would be my Abel Ferrara salute.
Nice, nice. I have to talk about those for a second. So during the 80s, I lived in New York, and I specifically lived in Brooklyn, Midwood, and down one subway stop or a 10-minute walk for me was King's Crossing, and King's Crossing had this theater called the King's Crossing Theater. And all of these type of films that came out on VHS that would say, you know, played in New York, you know, they played a week at the King's Crossing. And that's where I saw Fear City. That's also where I saw Miss 45. And I was also very lucky at one point. I was in a coffee center store, and I ran into Zoe Tamerlis, or Zoe Lund, as she was called later, and actually met her at one point. So very cool. Both are great films. Great films.
Yes, they are.
What do you think, Doc? Have you heard of those before? I'm sure you probably heard of Miss 45.
Actually, I have a copy of Miss 45 right here in the room with me. I have not watched it yet, but I definitely want to. I've heard very, very good things. Jason actually introduced me to Miss 45. He sent me the trailer, and I'm like, oh, I got to find that. And I bought the Blu-ray, and it's been around here someplace. I've been very, very busy. But I would definitely want to see it. I have not seen his other film, though.
Okay. Fear City was I think his first film, wasn't it, George?
No, it was not. Give me a second.
Oh no, that's right.
His first movie I think was Driller Killer. I'm actually looking at
it
now. That's his first feature-length movie was The Driller Killer from 1979. Miss 45 is his second. Fear City is his third.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. There we go. So anyway, I thought I would do the same thing, but with an actor. Now, we all know who Peter Sellers is. And you know, I mean, great movies from, of course, Dr. Strangelove, The Lady Killers, all these great films that he did, The Party, The Bobo. But there's a couple of films.
Being There.
Oh, yeah. Being There is a great film. I'm a great Hal Ashby fan. But there's a couple of films that are under the radar for him. And the first one I would pick is Hoffman. Now, do any of you guys know this film at all?
Hoffman?
No.
Okay, so Hoffman was a film that he did in 71. And basically, it's an updating of the William Wyler film, The Collector. And I don't have the information right in front of me. I forget who plays the woman in it, but he blackmails her. Pardon?
Sinead Kuzak.
Oh, that's who it is, Sinead Kuzak. And she was in... The last thing I saw her in was V for Vendetta. But yeah, Sinead Kuzak, that's who it is. And he blackmails her to come to his apartment. And it's basically a two-character thing, and it is creepy as hell. And it's really, really, really good. And it's unusual for Sellers to do a more dramatic role. And that's what he does here. And from what I understand, he hated this movie. He tried to bury it. But fortunately, it's out there. And you can see it. It's on YouTube. And it's an excellent film. And I would recommend it highly. One of my favorite Peter Sellers films. The second film is probably a little more well-known. But it's one of my favorite comedies from the 70s. Called The Magic Christian. And basically you have Peter Sellers as Guy Grand, the richest person in the world. He adopts Ringo Starr, and then he just goes and teaches him that money will buy everything and everyone. And it is wonderful. and it is one of the most satirical pieces out there. It was written by Terry Southern and also co-written by some of the Pythons who are in it too. And it also has a theme song from Badfinger, which hit number one. But it's a really good film, and I would recommend it highly. I'm sure you've heard of that, or I've seen that, George.
The Magic Christian, that's actually on my list of movies to see. I'm trying to make my way down it. I took a dent out of it last year, but The Magic Christian is on that list. I do want to see that. As for Hoffman, I've never seen that, but you mentioned it's on YouTube, so I'm going to be looking it up.
Yeah, yeah. It's Magic Christian has everybody. I mean, you have Raquel Welch in a leather teddy and whips. You might want to see
that's
that.
Nice.
You have that's always a good thing. You have Christopher Lee in it as Dracula. You have Roman Polanski. No, actually, you have someone singing to Roman Polanski, who turns out to be Yul Brynner in drag.
Okay.
Okay, it's wild. It literally is a wild film, and the point being that everybody has their price. Oh, I'll tell you who else is in it, too, is Spike Milligan.
Yeah, Spike.
You met him? Oh, good God. You are now a god in my repertoire here. So tell us about that.
Oh, I never met him. I just said Spike Milligan. I like him.
Oh, you said Spike. Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I misheard you.
That's okay.
But yeah, I'm a big Spike Milligan fan also. So yeah, that would be my double feature. So,
nice.
So do you think we're bringing people in with these movies, or are we absolutely losing our shirt at this point?
I think we might be intriguing the real movie fans. I mean, if people have tuned out, then they're obviously not interested in movies, and we don't need them. But I think the real diehard ones will stay tuned in, and we're the ones we want to keep. So there you go.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah,
well, that's good.
The Magic Christian is available on YouTube also. When we did the Watch of Skidoo, Magic Christian actually popped up on my two possible watch view list. So it's there. So that's an easy one to find. It sounds pretty good.
Nice. Well, as I said, I'm one of the co-admins of Incredibly Strange Films, which is one of the largest film groups on Facebook. And we have a gentleman by the name of Stephen Lowe who also did our logo for us, the Deviant Legion logo. But he also is the curator of that. So he and I work at making sure we get a lot of these movies up there that we talk about and that we think people are interested in. So just, go to YouTube and search Incredibly Strange Films, and it comes right up. And you'll get to see all these films that we're talking about.
Cool.
All right. So we're back to Doc. Hello, Doc.
Hey, let's go on a trip to a different... to a really, really, really interesting place that loves to rip off American movies. Does that sound good to you? Okay.
Yeah, that sounds good to me.
Let's go to Turkey.
Uh-oh.
I've got two.
Turkey.
Everybody thinks I'm going to say the Turkish Star Wars. No. Or maybe the Turkish Wizard of Oz. Maybe not. There is a film that I have seen recently. Its original name is Lion Man, but it was put out by AGFA, the American Genre Film Association, on Blu-ray, and their version is called The Sword and the Claw. It is an absolutely bonkers take on the whole Conan Barbarian type thing, and it's got Kutni Tarkin, who is in the Turkish Star Wars and a ton of other Turkish films. It's colorful, it's pardon my language, but it is the one of the most batshit crazy films I have ever seen. It is fun. It's actually coherent, which is strange from Turkey. And it's a fun flick. And then the follow-up, this one hurts a lot, but it just shows you the length and breadth of good Turkish films, the bad Turkish films. I would have to say Satan, a.k.a. the Turkish Exorcist.
It's called Satan?
Actually, give me a sec here. I will pull it up to pronounce the correct spelling of the name. Because I actually have my inventory in front of me here. It's spelled S-E-Y-T-A-N. It's on YouTube, and it is absolutely ridiculous. It's kind of almost a scene-for-scene scene of the original Exorcist, but with seriously bad special effects and lots of yelling. It's crazy.
Now that's one subgenre I've never really gotten into, is both Turkish and then Indian films, which I've never really been exposed a lot to, so I can't say much. I mean, I have seen bits and pieces of two films you mentioned. So, I mean, I've seen clips, but I've never seen the full films. George, are you familiar with any Turkish films at all?
Not at all, no. When you said a country that's ripping us off, I thought you were going to say Italy, because they have a whole ton of rip-offs of American movies.
Oh, like, absolutely. I was going to ask if I could get spaghetti.
Yeah, spaghetti westerns. And let's not forget On the Door, the Big Time Exorcist ripoff.
Right. And of course, they have the Polizias and all these wonderful films. We have a gentleman by the name of Mike House, who is an expert in spaghetti westerns, and I've worked with Mike on several podcasts, and he loves that stuff. He just absolutely loves that stuff. Okay. So I'll go next. You know, you get these films where they talk about don't do drugs, right? And you get, of course, you know, Reefer Madness, and you get all these films. And then in the 60s and 70s, you get Panic at Needle Park and all these type of films. But I've got two that I really like that I got to talk about. Now, I graduated from high school in 75 and then went right to college. And within a very short time, I was on the board to pick all the movies for the midnight shows. And at that time, I was still in contact with the guy that ran the drive-in. So we could get films that nobody else could. And basically, one of the films that I'm picking is a film called Chappaqua, okay, which was done by a director by the name of Conrad Rooks. Conrad Rooks was sort of hooked up with Ken Kesey and the later Kerouac group, and he became a heroin junkie. And Chappaqua is his film about getting off of heroin and how he did it, and it's done in a semi-documentary thing, and William Burroughs is in it, Andy Warhol is in it for a brief second, but actually Lou Reed and the Velvet Underground did the music. It's really hard to find these days, but it is an excellent film, and it's something I recommend highly. Now, on the opposite end, you get these films where, you know, the older stars would try to hip it up, And of course, we just did Skidoo as a commentary watch. But
oh,
another
yes,
one that
did.
I love is a film called The Big Cube. And basically, it's Lana Turner comes in as this homewrecker after this gentleman's wife dies. His daughter doesn't like her, hooks up with her boyfriend to basically poison her by giving her LSD. And so you get to see Lana Turner in a negligee in this big cage, you know, going batshit while everyone else is laughing at her. Okay? It's bad. It's wonderful. And it's much, much better with some ganja. I'm just telling you now. So that would be my double feature. Have you guys heard of either of those?
You guys are really, really good. You have been stumping me all night. I mean, I'm writing a list here of movies that I am going to watch. You guys have chosen some really bonkers movies. And, kudos
you.
To both of you. You've stumped Movie Guy 24/7.
It's not that we want to stump anyone, but the nice thing is we want to – there's so many movies out there. I mean, I get to a point where, you know, these days it's all the superheroes and it's all the product. But back in the day in the 70s and 60s and earlier, there were all these little films that were interesting. Maybe they weren't great films, but they were interesting. And they're forgotten, and I love to shine a light on this stuff. I think it's a great thing to do. So that's why we're doing this tonight. And by the way, if you're listening, you know, you can call in and tell us your choice. Let me just get here for a second.
I have a question for you.
Yeah, okay, go ahead.
Carl, when you said Conrad Brooks, are we talking the same Conrad Brooks?
No. Conrad Brooks, not Conrad Brooks.
Oh, good. Okay.
Brooks.
Okay, gotcha.
He was a director. He did another film, Steppenwolf, in the 70s, early 70s.
Oh.
I was just going to say the call-in number for us tonight is 657-383-0397. So, you know, if you want to call in with your suggestions, please do. That's 657-383-0397. Okay, so whose turn is it now? Is it
mine.
Is it yours? Yeah, it's yours, George. So go give us another double feature for our theater.
You got it. Okay, well, for this one, I'm going Blaxploitation from the 70s.
Yes.
All right. Well, I'm going to start out with something that Quentin Tarantino turned me on to, Detroit 9000.
Yeah.
That's the one that he references in Jackie Brown. And it's been a while since I've watched it, so I'm just quickly looking up the plot. It stars Alice Rocco, Harry Rhodes, Vonetta McGee, and after a fundraiser for a black politician is robbed, Detroit police detectives on the case to try to figure out what's going on. It's pretty cool. I like it. I've seen it two or three times. Now, I would partner that with, Black Belt Jones from 1974. That stars Jim Kelly. It's kind of a kung fu movie mixed with blaxploitation, and he's going after some mobsters who killed his master. And really, I thought it was cool. And the way I was turned on to Black Belt Jones was through a movie from the 80s called It Came from Hollywood. That was sort of a faux documentary. All these actors, Cheech and Chong, Gilda Radner, John Candy, Dan Aykroyd, introduced clips from all these bad movies. And they showed like a little bit of the trailer from Black Belt Jones. And I just knew I had to see it. And a few years later, I found it. Watched it and fell in love with it. I thought it was cool.
Well, you know, something, I'll get it to you, George, but last week we did a show on blaxploitation with Derek Ferguson, who's an author, who is into the black pulp and that sort of thing. He's a film director. He's written a couple of books on film. And we had him and a young lady by the name of Mika Collins on. And we did this whole show on blaxploitation. I love blaxploitation. Freaking love blaxploitation. And so it was really, it was a good show. I'll be sure to get that to you up by PM so you can listen to it. Okay, both of those I know quite well. I've seen 9,000 a couple of times. Black Belt Jones I've seen several times. Really good films. You're familiar with those, aren't you, Doc?
Yes, I've actually seen Black Belt Jones twice, and the fight scenes in that movie are just awesome. Seriously. And you wouldn't expect such a tall guy like Jim Kelly to be able to pull off moves like he does, but he trained with Bruce Lee, so how could he not? I mean, it's just amazing. And
he was in Enter the Dragon.
Right, exactly.
Yes, he was
in Enter the Dragon. And that's how he got his start. I mean, he's a wonderful, wonderful actor and for blaxploitation, just one of the great ones, you know, along with Fred the Hammer Williamson, Jim Brown, Richard Roundtree, Ron O'Neill,
Pam Grier,
all those people.
Female.
Yeah. You know who I like at Black Belt Jones is Gloria Hendry. Plays his girlfriend, and she has that fight scene where she just kicks ass.
Oh, yeah.
See, Gloria I always had Hendry. A thing. I have a thing with, you know, I fell in love with Pam Grier, so the whole idea of black women kicking ass, I'm okay with that. Same, of course, you go into the Hong Kong films you get into Angela Mao and all those people, and they're just wonderful, wonderful, you know. Good stuff, good stuff. Okay, Doc, it's your turn.
Okay, now I'm going to take a turn for the extreme dark, weird side now. The point where this may give some people nightmares. I like to call this the Asian brain bangers. I was thinking about the movie Tetsuo the Iron Man and Rubber's Lover.
Okay, Tetsuo, I know. The other one, I don't know at all.
Same here.
Okay. Tetsuo is a really, really crazy experimental film from the early 90s that was actually released on VHS and extremely popular to rent from Blockbuster Video. Now, Tetsuo's popularity kind of tanked after the second movie was pretty good. The third movie, The Bullet Man, was just like... But the editing, camera work, and just pure insanity on the screen, it's loud, it's vicious, it's ferocious, and it's basically, the plot is, a little plot synopsis is, a man and his girlfriend accidentally hit another person with their car, and they go get out of the car, don't even check on them, and have sex on the car. And then the guy that they hit kind of starts replacing body parts of his with like rebar and all sorts of steel stuff, and then Tetsuo starts mutating into the Iron Man, just like this other guy, and then they fight at the end. And it's got some of the coolest editing and most just crazy soundtrack I have ever heard. Now, Rubber's Lover is right around the same type of insanity-wise. It's very industrial. It's what they call like a splatterpunk film, where there's blood everywhere, all sorts of crazy mess. And in this one, basically scientists create a brain-altering drug for experiments, and after one of the experiments goes excessively wrong. They try and find more test subjects, and all hell breaks loose. And we're talking just all sorts of gore, nastiness, in-your-face edits. Both films are black and white, and they were made about 5 years apart. I don't think there's anybody that worked on both films at the same time. I'm not really sure. But I would definitely suggest those. Rubber's Lover is definitely like 18 and above because of the whole drug use, excessive violence, sexual situations. That's more towards the adult, the older caliber, like NC-17 R rated there. So I would definitely suggest those. If you are easily offended or easily freaked out, I would definitely not suggest watching.
And you've just bumped it to the top of my list.
Excellent. Yep, there's another movie.
Rubber's Lover.
There's another movie that's kind of almost like Rubber's Lover, but there's actually more of a plot, and it's like Pinocchio, 9 something here. Pinocchio 9. I know I spelled that so wrong. I can't find it right at the moment, but it's pretty. It's completely bizarre and kind of in the same vein. And that's just one of the ones that
if I were going to suggest a film of the same type, I'd go later. And there's a wonderful satirical comedy that came out of Japan called Big Man Japan. And
yes.
I don't know if either of you have seen that, but it's wild.
Yes,
and it's basically the setup is there's this guy and he mutates into Big Man Japan whenever a monster comes around so he can save the world, save the country. And nobody likes him. Nobody likes him at all. And so it's wild. And that one I would recommend also. You guys know that, don't you? You've seen that one?
Oh, yeah. I've seen it multiple times.
What was it called?
Big Man Japan.
Big Man Japan. No, I've not seen that.
Oh, listen. It's hysterical. It's so much fun. It really is. And my synopsis doesn't do it justice, trust me. But, yeah, I would recommend that one. Now, I think what I'm going to do is go the opposite way and do my comedy double feature, okay? And the first one in this is a film that, unfortunately, I got lost, more or less. But it's a wonderful film. We all know Rock and Roll High School, which had the Ramones, and it was directed by Alan Arkush. But he did another film.
Get Crazy.
Yes. Get Crazy is just fucking awesome.
I love it.
I love that film.
I saw it at the movies.
What? Go ahead. What was that again, George?
I said I saw it at the movies in 83.
You're one of the few people that did. I tell you that. Good Lord.
Now I just got to find the 8 other people that saw it at the movies, and I'm good.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he's not really kidding. There was problems with the distribution and with the financing, and Alan Arkush, you know, is still looking for a good print so they can do a DVD and Blu-ray release. And I hope they find one because it deserves it. Basically, it's the last day of the Fillmore, more or less. And Alan, at the time it was going by Gurwitz, but he owns the place. Daniel Stern is in it. And they have all these people doing takeoffs on rock stars. Malcolm McDowell is basically Mick Jagger. you know, and B.B. King is in there, and let's see who else is in there. Lou Reed is in there. That's Bob Dylan.
Lee Vang.
Mm-hmm.
Lee
Vang is in it too. But it's such a, I mean, let me put it this way: you have a movie with a giant walking marijuana cigarette, you know, going around like, "You want to smoke me? You want to smoke me? Come on, smoke me, please, smoke me." It's wild, and it is such a wonderful film. Now, the other one I want to talk about, and it is on the YouTube channel, and I'm pulling it up now. It's called American Raspberry, otherwise also known as Primetime. Now, you got a lot of these TV types movies, right? Where, you know, like The Groove Tube and Kentucky Fried Movie.
I've seen Primetime. I remember it. It's funny.
You know, but this film is, I remember someone recommended it to me, and I watched it on YouTube, and my mouth hit the floor like about 6 times. It is so on PC, it's not funny, and it is hysterical. Let me just pull something up here. So one of the things they have in it, to take off with Warren Oates, you know, you do like Wide World of Sports and that sort of thing. And so they have, let's see, the Charles Whitman Memorial Shoot, where they actually go up to the tower and start shooting people. Oh, I got a Letterman. I mean, it's wild. And it is really, really a brutal little film, and I loved it. And it is on the ISF playlist, so you have not seen it, please do so. But I will warn you, you will be offended. Okay, you will be offended, and don't come back at me saying I didn't warn you. Okay.
Would you say this YouTube channel was called Insanely Bad Movies?
No, it's called Incredibly Strange Films.
Okay.
Which by the way, I don't know if you remember, but I'll make sure I put you in with us. I'll do that for you, George.
Okay. Yeah, I'll look that up on YouTube. That sounds like it's fun.
Oh, it is. It is. And it's good stuff. Have you heard of either of those, Doc?
No, I have not, actually. You've stumped me with those. You've got me with those, too.
Yeah. Well, that's sort of the idea. We did say we were doing obscure films.
Without a doubt.
Okay. So let's see. I think it's your turn, Doc.
Okay. I'm going for the 50s. There's so many 1950s monster movies and sci-fi flicks out there that are just really, really fun. But there are a few that are really hard to see nowadays because of rights issues or estates, you know, owning copyright or they've been lost. But two films I have here, one of them is extremely hard to actually get a copy of because of the estate ownership, and the other one is just it's really, really obscure that when I say the name, you're going to go, what? But trust me, it's pretty cool. Okay, the first one is Invasion of the Saucer Men. I love this movie. It's, you know, teenagers versus these big, veiny-headed aliens that have their hands detached and have these, like, needles in them that knock you out, and it's really cool, and I think it was Paul Blaisdell who designed them. I'm not sure. I have to double check that. It's just a really cool little 50s, you know, 1950s teenagers versus aliens flick. And it's really fun. And it's really hard to find, like I said, because the rights are in limbo right now. And if we can get a copy, which I have a copy, though I won't say how, it's definitely, definitely you got to see it. And I would love to see that in a movie theater because it would just be a blast. Now, the second one is called Kirku, Beast of the Amazon.
Okay, you stumped me on this one. I don't know this one.
Kirku, Beast of the Amazon is basically a jungle-based slasher film from the 50s. There's this creature that kind of looks like a really giant pissed-off echidna with huge claws that's ripping through people. And there's a whole plot with, I think it's gold or something like that, or some... or gold or diamonds, and it's really just crazy. And it's actually really bloody for a 50s film. You know, you don't see guts and gruel, but there's a lot of chocolate syrup around, a.k.a. 1950s blood. And it's just, it's cheap, it's crazy, it's fast and fun, and I was really, really impressed by the monster design. It was pretty cool.
Nice. Yeah, that second one, I have no clue. Now, Saucerman, I've seen several times. But that, yeah, the other one, no, I don't know that one.
Neither do I.
Yeah.
I mean, it's one of those movies that you got to see it, if there's any way. Let me see if I can. I'm trying to find some Beast of the Amazon. My computer's running a little bit slow because I'm backing up several hard drives at once. So, let's see here. Come on, you can do it. All right. Kirku, Beast of the Amazon with John Broomfield and Beverly Garland was in it. And it is on Amazon in some really, really ugly form, but if you might be able to piece it together, and it's in there. And it's really crazy.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
But I have a lot of contacts, so I actually have a copy of this movie, which is fantastic.
Okay. Okay, George, I think it's your turn now.
Okay. Well, I'm going to go with comedies, too, and I'm going to go with, from the subgenre, the 80s teen sex comedies, that whole spate of comedies that came out in the wake of Porky's. Now, the first one I would select is Screwballs, 1983, a movie from New World Pictures. Basically, it's about these five high school guys who end up in detention because of the high school, beauty queen. Her name is Purity Bush. And they decide, well, we got to get even with Purity, so we're going to make a pact that by the end of the week, we're going to at least get a glimpse of her boobs because she's the only girl in school that hasn't put out for anybody. You know, so it's all about their attempts to get Purity to expose her breasts. It's a short movie. I saw that one at the theater, and it was so short, the theater actually preceded it with a Three Stooges thing before the movie actually started. So they needed to fill the time. It's sleazy, it's cheap, but I get a good laugh out of it. And I'm actually Facebook friends with a couple of actresses. Well, two of the actresses and one of the actors from it. So it's really funny. Now I would partner that with I would partner that with another 80s movie called Hot Moves. This one is about four high school juniors who make a pact to lose their virginity before beginning their senior year. It has a somewhat more prominent cast. Among others, it has Michael Zurich from Private School, Jill Sholin from The Stepfather, Deborah Richter from Midnight Madness, and a few other people. Kerry Noonan, she was in Friday the 13th, Part 6. Monique Gabrielle, who played in Bachelor Party, and Deathstalker 2. It's a funny movie. A friend of mine turned me on to it, and it's enjoyable.
Yeah, that's a subgenre. I know both those films, but to be honest, I haven't seen either. It's a subgenre that I don't really have a lot of love for, unfortunately. But I understand the appeal, to say the least.
They came out in my teenage years. These were the kind of movies I snuck off to see without my parents knowing.
Right. Yeah, as I said before, I was at the drive-in, so it was Russ Meyers and that type of stuff. I'll get to that one here soon. But I mean, I understand the appeal, and there are always sex comedies, teenage sex comedies, no matter what decade. I mean, you always have those. That's a standard genre to have. Do you know either of those two, Doc?
Actually, yes. One of the first sleepovers I ever went to, we actually watched Screwballs, and then we watched Cocoon, and then Friday the 13th Part 2. So that was a very interesting night. And then I think in the morning we watched Mystic Pizza. Anyway. But yeah, it was
who chose that?
And they're making a musical out of Mystic Pizza. And I kid you not. Yeah, they are.
I'm the one who chose the Friday the 13th flick. You know, and everybody else is like, oh, we got to watch it. I remember, because it's been such a long time, that they were very nice. Forgive me for saying this, but tatas in the film, they were very nice. But anyway, moving on.
Well, the film buzz or whatever you want to say. Yes.
Yeah, mungala munga hanga or something.
Okay, well, I guess it's my turn. Since George did those movies, I thought I'd go and do the drive-in double feature sex comedies. Okay? And so this goes back to the 70s now. Now, we talked about this yesterday. I did a show with Christoph, and we were talking about remakes. And one of the ones he picked was The Little Shop of Horrors, and then, of course, the musical version that Frank Oz did. And so I asked him, well, did you know there was a third version of Little Shop of Horrors? And he said, no. And I said, oh, yes, there is. And it's called Please Don't Eat My Mother.
I heard of that.
Okay,
it is.
It's a softcore version of the same story with Audrey, but instead of saying "feed me," it's like "give me some chow, you motherfucker." and it stars this actor I love by the name of Buck Kardashian, and he is a voyeur, and so basically he brings women back and feeds them. And he's in love with his mother, and his mother, the plant lusts after the mother and wants to eat the mother, and it's just, like, wild, and it is insane, and it's absolutely so much fun. So that would be my first one. I almost went with Flesh Gordon as my second one, but I thought that was too well-known. So I went and then decided to go the Russ Meyers route. And his best-known film, of course, is Beyond the Valley of the Dolls, at least one of his best-known. And, of course, Faster Pussycat, Kill Kill. But I decided to go with Beyond the Valley of the Ultra Vixens.
Ooh, Ushi Diggard. Nice.
Oh, yeah, Ushi. I love Ushi. And let's face it, that he had a love of, shall we say, grand protuberances. And Kitten, but that is in it. I can never pronounce that last name. And it's basically a corn pone, just wonderfully slapstick film. And it is so much fun. And so those would be the two that I would recommend as a double feature. So what do you guys think of that?
Neat.
Yes,
I like Russ Meyers. He's funny.
Oh yeah.
Yes.
And let's not forget, guess who, by the way, guess we all know that Roger Ebert wrote Beyond the Valley of the Dolls. But
signed my VHS copy of it, my VHS copy of it.
Right. But he also co-wrote two other films, of which one of the ones he co-wrote was Beyond the Valley of the Ultra Vixens. People don't realize, but he did.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah, good
stuff. The guy
stuff.
Who complains about Flasher films helped create that movie. It's kind of a thing that, you know,
When he did this thing on Silent Night, Deadly Night, I had to shake my head because, you know, you are one of the reasons, you know, you hooked up with Russ Meyers. You should love exploitation because that's where you got your start.
Yep.
You know, yeah, I get it, Doc. Trust me, I do. I still love Roger Ebert and respect him.
I do
quite
too,
a
but
bit.
It's just that one thing annoys me. But anyway.
Yeah. Well, there we go. So Doc, we're back to you.
Okay. Now, these next films were made by Toho, the same company who gave us Lupin the Third, Godzilla, Rodan, Mothra, Ghidorah, all the classics, and Toho can be very, very sensitive about offending people. Believe it or not, it's true. Because they put out two films that, when they first came out in the theaters, they were complimented, then reviled, and then one of them was put on Laserdisc. The Laserdisc was only on the market for 2.5 months before it was pulled because some people were offended by one phrase in the film, and it was pulled, and it's officially in the Toho vaults and will never see the light of day again. There was a VHS release of this movie back in the early 90s, and it was absolutely and utterly freaking terrible and chopped to bits. So, and the first film here I'm talking about is Prophecies of Nostradamus. You can see, if you can find the Paramount VHS release, it is absolutely, it's poop. It's poopy. It's absolute crap. Because there's a scene at the beginning of the movie that actually they re-edited to the end of the film and has no right being there. If you actually, there are ways of seeing Prophecies of Nostradamus. Through the many connections I've had in the past, I was able to get a direct Laserdisc rip of Prophecies of Nostradamus. Everything intact, even the scenes that offended people. It was a scene that happened in New Guinea where some scientists were victims of extreme radiation, and there was also an attack by the New Guinea people, and the remaining scientists were literally slaughtering the New Guinea people and calling them animals and monsters. And there's a Japanese scientist who's, you know, trying to tell them, these are people, stop. And that, along with the actual end of the film, which is two radioactive mutated children, because there's a nuclear apocalypse during this whole thing, that really set off the Japanese censors, because anything that has to do with nuclear warfare, radiation, you know, actual physical human damage by that is extremely censored in Japan or not allowed at all because of what happened. Now, like I said, I actually have a rip from a Laserdisc of this, and it's a movie that needs to be seen because of its pure insanity, number one, and number two, the soundtrack of this movie is so awesome, and it's actually done in the key of E, which makes it extremely hard to pull off any music if you're not a highly trained musician. So I would definitely do Prophecies of Nostradamus. Now, the second film, there was a version that hit here in America with John Carradine. It's called Half Human. half human, is basically like the Japanese version of the, it's probably the Japanese version of the Yeti. And Hiro Nakajima, who played Godzilla, played the adult Yeti in this film. Now, Toho actually decided when this was released to put it again out on Laserdisc, but then people were upset that that the Hill people that were portrayed in this film were seen in a negative light. And because Japan has a lot of things with traditionalism and not offending ancestors, they decided to pull the Laserdisc off the shelves again. Now, I actually, like I said, through this is another one of those, I, through connections, I've got a laser, it's a kind of a piece together thing where you can see some of the time code and whatever, but it's basically the whole film, except for about 10 seconds, that it's the complete Japanese version, and it's sitting right here, and I'm going, everybody's got to see this, because the American version was, it's just so bad. But this, the movie itself is fantastic. It is just so good, and there's so much emotion played by Hiro Nakajima when Yeti loses his son because the humans accidentally kill it. The rage and the sadness that Hiro portrays just by his movements is astounding. And I'm just thinking about it, getting tears in my eyes on how powerful it is. This has got to be seen. This must be seen one way or another. And if you know, getting, if you actually tried to get copies of these laser discs, we're talking several thousand dollars a piece. Because that's how.
Wow. Wow.
And I, like I said, I did not pay that much for a laser disc. My contacts throughout the years have supplied me with some pretty awesome stuff. So I would definitely.
I would agree with that.
This, and I can guarantee you that if Toho ever got the gist of having, you know, having this played in public, we would be sued into oblivion. So, yeah. These are one of those ones that, you know what, we're gonna end the night with a bang, and that'll do it. You know.
So do you know either one of those two, George?
All right. So Prophecies of Nostradamus, I don't think I've heard of that one, and I didn't catch the name of the second one.
Half human.
Half human.
Oh, half. Yeah. All right. I did hear that name. I'm sorry. No, I haven't heard of either film, but the very fact that Toho pulled them and put them in a vault kind of makes me curious to see them now. I have this thing. If a movie is deliberately shuttered away by its studio or somebody that's done it, I want to say it. In my estimation, in my little opinion, the holy grail of unseen movies is a movie that Jerry Lewis did in 1972 called The Day the Clown Cried. In it, he plays a clown who is locked up in a concentration camp and is ordered to entertain the children. And I understand it ends with him leading the children into the gas chambers. Now, I'm told that there were financial problems that prevented it from being released, but I'm also told that the picture is in such incredibly bad taste, it was never meant to be seen. And ultimately, before he died, Jerry Lewis bought it up, bought the rights and all that, and said, it shall never be seen until 10 years after my death. So there will be a point at someday when it will be available. I think it's like it's incredibly bad and incredibly bad taste, but just the fact that they've withheld it makes me just a little bit curious.
Oh, yeah. I'll watch that when it comes out, if I'm still here. No question.
Now, there's another picture.
Definitely.
I'm sorry, I interrupted. I'm sorry.
No. He interrupted you. Go ahead, George.
I was going to say there's another picture that I'm not sure we'll ever see the light of day, because one of its stars is one of the people mowed down in the wake of the Me Too movement. I'm talking about Louis C.K., the comedian. Right before the allegations came out about him, a movie that he wrote, directed, and starred in called I Love You, Daddy was supposed to come to theaters. Now, it was pulled from release 1 week before its date. because of the allegations.
And
as of the last time I checked, there are no plans to ever release it. But what happened was, because it was around Oscar season, a whole bunch of Oscar screeners went out. So if you look, you can find a copy of it, and I luckily stumbled across a copy of it. Or actually, I should say, I unluckily stumbled across a copy of it. I did watch it.
Oh,
my God. This guy, he fetishizes Woody Allen's Manhattan. That's what this movie is. It's a salute to Manhattan, including a very creepy relationship between an aging filmmaker and a girl who's barely out of her teens. And it's done in black and white. It's super pretentious. There's not a single likable character in the whole movie. I sat there watching it with my mouth open in utter disbelief, like, what the F? What is this garbage? I mean, they were actually going to release this to theaters? I mean, I was just dumbfounded. I didn't even know what to say. And the only thing that prevented me from actually writing and publishing a review, I didn't want any questions. How did you see this movie? I didn't want questions.
No.
There you go.
I don't blame you on that one.
Go ahead,
George?
Guys. Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, there you are. Okay. Okay. I think you just faded out there for a second. Okay, so we got one more coming up. I think it's to you, George, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, I know we're running out of time here, and I have a few, and I'm trying to choose which one to give you, and you know what? I think I'm going to, well, we're ending it out, so I'm going to close it off with what I like to call the Kill Bill double feature, but it's not the Kill Bill movies. No.
Okay.
Are two of the movies that heavily influenced the Kill Bill movies from Quentin Tarantino.
Ooh.
So, yeah. So the first one is a really crummy, sleazy Swedish picture called Thriller, A Cruel Picture, or under another title, They Call Her One Eye. And basically, it's this revenge picture. This young woman, you know, as a result of a sexual assault as a child, she's mute. And a little bit later, she's kidnapped and forced to work as a prostitute. And when she attacks a John, they retaliate by cutting out one of her eyes. Hence, they call her One Eye. So she's in this prostitution ring, and, well, they give her just a little bit of freedom. So in her free time, she secretly learns to shoot and fight and drive, and she takes her revenge against all the people that wronged her. Now, this picture is violent. It's not particularly well made, but what really astonished me about the picture, I mean, I ordered it through Amazon, and I got the uncut version. Well, this is a broadcast to be heard by a lot of people, so I'm not sure how to put this. Let's just say there are sexual shots in the movies that you would only ever see in a hardcore porno movie.
Right, there's inserts, yeah, what they call inserts.
Yeah, certain bodily, whatever you want to call it, that's in there. And I have to say, I was a little bit shocked, like, really? Okay, this is interesting. Wow. But yeah, I'd put that in there, and then I would partner that with the Japanese manga picture, Lady Snowblood.
Oh,
nice.
Love me some Lady Snowblood. Love it.
Yeah, I mean, this Miko Kaji, she kicks ass. Big time.
Without a fucking doubt.
Yeah. Wow, you can say F on the F word on this show, okay.
Oh, yeah, we do. It's not a problem. By general
rule, I don't swear, but I'm trying to be careful absolutely what I say, but okay. Good to know.
Yeah, we're a little...
But yeah, in any event, I would partner up those two pictures, again, by virtue of their connection to Quentin Tarantino and Kill Bill. And in case you haven't guessed, I am really an admirer of Quentin Tarantino as a filmmaker.
Yeah, I'm a big fan also. The thing I love about Tarantino, and everyone, you know, just, you know, says, well, he borrows from everyone. Well, certainly. That's, I mean, what do you do as a cook? You know, you take things together and you make it your own. You know, if you're making a bouillabaisse, if you're making a gumbo, whatever the case, you know, you could throw it, you can make your, and that's exactly what he does. The second thing I love about him is he's given actors second chances all over the place. Michael Parks, we talked, of course, about Robert Forster.
John Travolta.
John Travolta. Just, it's wonderful to see these actors. And,
you know,
and that he uses them. And he loves them. And you could tell.
I knew early on that Quentin was going to be really big. In 1992, I went to see Reservoir Dogs. I had seen the trailer. And there was just something about it that told me, George, this is going to be cool. You need to see this opening weekend. So it didn't open wide. It opened in a handful of art house theaters. And it opened at the Ritz Theater in Center City, or Old City, whatever you call that. So I went to see it that Saturday, and I have to tell you, it blew me away. I was absolutely impressed. And I was with a couple of friends, and I said afterwards, this guy Quentin Tarantino, he's definitely going places. I promise you he's going to be big. Well, here we are more than 25 years later. Oh, yeah, he's a name all right. I love it.
Oh, absolutely.
And
absolutely.
Funny part about Reservoir Dogs, a few people ran out of the theater when that ear-cutting scene came on.
Right.
I hadn't seen anything like that. I hadn't seen an exodus like that since I went to see Henry, Portrait of a Serial Killer, a couple years before, and watched as, throughout the whole movie, 10 people, including the person I was with, walked out of Henry.
Wow.
So
yeah, I could see that. That's a disturbing film.
Oh, totally. I mean, it's fascinating but disturbing.
Right. Yeah, it's a good one. So maybe what I should do to finish up, because we forget that many of our patrons at our theater are kids. So we should do a children's double feature.
I have one of those on my list.
Okay.
Perfect.
Well, we could finish up with yours, but my two now, of course, we were talking about Quentin Tarantino. I happen to love Robert Rodriguez also.
Oh, yeah.
And Rodriguez has done many, many children's films. Spy Kids. Lava Girl, but the one film that sort of went under the radar that nobody really knows that he did is a film called Shorts.
I knew you were going to say that. That's one of the few movies from the past 10 years I haven't seen.
Right, well, no one seems to have seen it.
I wanted to see it, but I was working at the time, and unfortunately I didn't get to see everything I do now, but I do want to see that at some point. I heard it was really good.
It's so much fun. I mean, it's perfect. Basically what it is, a bunch of kids they get a wishing stone, and so they can wish for whatever they want, and it just goes off from there. The adults are James Spader. He plays this evil corporate guy that everyone in the place works for him, John Cryer. But it is just a blast. William H. Macy is in it too. There is a shit monster, I kid you not. It's just wonderful. It's such a blast and so much fun. And you could see, you know, everyone just having the time of their life with this film. And that's a film that I would do for the kids. The second one I would... There are many other really oddball children's films, but the most oddball children's films come from Canada.
Okay? Oh my God, yes.
And I had two choices, and I picked the one that not many people know. I'll give you the first one, which I didn't pick, was the peanut butter solution.
I saw some of that. Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah, that's a fun movie. But this one is called Jacob Tutu Meets the Hooded Fang.
I've
and
heard of
it. And this is the 1978 version. Now, this is a children's story by Mordecai Rickler, who was a Canadian Jewish author. He also authored The Apprenticeship of Judy Kravitz. And what was the one that, and Betty's version, too. But he also did children's stories. And this one stars Alex Karras, otherwise known as Mongo. Or if you remember football back in the 60s, he was with the Detroit Lions. And basically it's this young boy hides away because he's done something wrong, and he's sent to the children's prison, and his older sister enlists the aid of two people to get him and all the kids out of the prison, which is on an island. And it's just so much fun, and it's silly, and it's got lots of action, and it's just I love it. I love Jacob Tutu. So those would be my two choices for the children's films. Do you guys know either one of those?
Yes.
Yes. The peanut butter solution gave me nightmares when I was a kid. But a lot of things did.
Never saw
Jacob
Tutu.
But do you know
Tutu.
Jacob Tutu at all, Doc? Have you
I
ever
know
heard
it,
heard
but I've never
one?
Seen it.
I've never
It's wonderful. It's so much fun. You know, it's sort of like the Goonies to a certain degree. But it predates
cool.
the Goonies too. It's just a lot of fun. So here we are. We have a little more time yet if we want to. I could give you one more shot. We'll give it to our guest, George. Give us one more to take us out on, double feature if you have one.
Well, in keeping with the kids' movie motif, I chose a couple of pictures from 1979. Now, the first one is called CHOMPS. It's an acronym, CHOMPS, and it's about a robotic dog who's also a home security system. Now, what connects me to the picture is late last year, I had the pleasure of interviewing one of the stars, Wesley Yore, who you might better know from Land of the Lost from the 70s.
Right.
I forgot to mention Movie Guy 24/7 recently expanded into the celebrity interview platform, so I've been interviewing celebrities, and Wesley was one of them. But in any event, Chomps was a funny movie, cheesy but enjoyable. And I would partner that with another 1979 film by the name of The Double MacGuffin. And it's about a bunch of kids who stumble across a briefcase full of money, and they also find a body, and police refuse to believe them, so they try to solve the mystery themselves. Now, the adult actors that are in the picture are George Kennedy and Ernest Borgnine, but it also has a bunch of kid actors in. Oh, Elkie Summer is in it too. But it also has kid actors in it. Vincent Spano, who was also in Over the Edge. Lisa Welchel, who you may remember as Blair from The Facts of Life. And a bunch of other kids who I don't think have really gone on to anything. And it was a cute little movie. But I like the fact that they actually entitle it The Double MacGuffin, because they're assuming intelligence on the part of the movie-going audience. You see, not a whole heck of a lot of people would know what a MacGuffin is, but I'm sure
That's
you
true.
Guys do.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Doc, you know what a MacGuffin is?
Is that almost like a red herring, sort of, kind of?
Yeah, exactly.
It's a plot device that has no intrinsic importance other than setting the plot in motion. And the two perfect examples are the briefcase in Pulp Fiction and that briefcase in Ronin. You never know what they are, But that's precisely the point. That's not important. What's in the cases, it's just merely a device to get the story in motion. And it's Hitchcock coined the term MacGuffin.
Right, right. And the best known one is another briefcase, which would be in Kiss Me Deadly.
Yes.
That's the one where I always point, if someone wants to know what a MacGuffin is, it's the briefcase in Kiss Me Deadly. Yeah.
Well, that's a good one too, but from my end, people seem to be more familiar with Pulp Fiction, so I just generally use that. Whatever. But in any event, that would be my junior double feature.
Well, I want to first off, I want to thank you, George, for joining us. It's been a pleasure.
Wait.
You're welcome back anytime, my friend, anytime.
Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate that. I had a blast talking to you guys.
Oh, cool.
Oh, wait.
I want to just do a quick thing here and just tell you what's coming up. First off, on Sunday, tell us about the movie that you're going to do a commentary watch on.
Okay, well, I actually want to hop in for just a second because I do have a kids double feature.
Go ahead. Do it, kids double
feature.
This is going to be a real quick one. This is a Disney film that they will never release again because there's satanic animal elements in it. I use the air quotes. And the first one is called Mr. Boogity. It's a horror movie for kids produced by Disney. Good luck finding a copy of it. It's pretty fun. And there's all sorts of hauntings and slime and goo and kids getting scared. It's fun. And then there's the second film is actually an Australian movie. It goes by several different names. The two names I remember right offhand are The Go Kids or Frog Dreaming. Have you guys heard
Frog
of that?
Frog Dreaming. I know it as Frog Dreaming.
It's also known as The Quest. That's how it was released on VHS in the 80s. Directed by Brian Trenchard Smith.
Yeah, it's a good film.
Exactly.
It's a real good film.
Now, it's got some horror elements because there's an unknown creature that was found in Billabong. It's really awesome photography. It's really awesome, awesome movie. And Umbrella Entertainment in Australia has put it out on Blu-ray. Because of some licensing issues, it's not hitting the States just yet, but eventually it will. I definitely suggest watching The Go Kids, The Quest, or Frog Dreaming. It's a really cool flick. And it actually
I just got to throw in one more, which I did not pick because it's pretty well known. But to me, the ultimate kid horror movie of all time is not The Goonies. It is The Monster Club, The Monster Squad.
Nice.
Oh, God, yes, The Monster Squad.
Fred Decker friggin' rules. I love that movie.
Took me a couple viewings to appreciate it, but it really is a good little movie.
Yeah.
And as long as we're throwing in bonus kids movies, I'm going to throw in one of my own. It's from Australia, or at least it takes place in Australia. It's from 1981. It's called The Earthling. It stars William Holden and Ricky Schroeder. Ricky Schroeder loses his parents in an accident, and he hooks up with William Holden, who's walking through the outback. He's a grumpy old man, and they kind of bond, whatever. Really nice photography of the Australian outback. Good storyline. Not a lot of people saw it, and nobody remembers it.
I remember it. I don't think I've ever seen it, though.
I've heard of it, but I know the film you're talking about.
Well, no one ever brings it up to me, but it's a picture that I really like, so.
Yeah. Yeah, and again, remember, that's exactly what we're doing here. We want to showcase a lot of these films and get people interested in them. So that's what we're doing. Again, I want to thank George for coming on with us. So, Doc, what are you doing on Sunday?
Well, sorry about that little mirror to the left there, but me and Danae are doing a live watch commentary of a very weird little film from Japan called Psycho Gothic Lolita. Ooh, It's crazy. It's one of those films that's so over the top, it's like you're watching a cartoon. It's hysterical. It's really weird, too.
Nice.
It's another Gerber aspect. Yep. So we're going to be doing
nice.
That this Sunday.
And I know Christoph is going to have a show on Thursday. I don't know what is going on there, but Christoph and I on Monday, we're going to do a special show in memoriam for Dick Miller, who just passed away.
I know.
We're going to do a show on him. And then Friday, I know I will do a show, but I do not know what it is yet. Forgive me. And the 15th of this month, we're going to have a special show. I'm not going to say what it is yet, but we're going to have a special show, and a special guest host will be coming on, and that should be a lot of fun. All right. Well, again, George, thank you so much for coming. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. It's been great.
Okay.
You've
and
been so
Doc,
awesome. Thank you so much. Yes.
Oh, absolutely. And Doc, as always, you are the producer, god of producers. We love you. Thank you so much for all you do.
Oh, you're very welcome.
And
I keep saying I'm not that good. Jeez.
Oh, horse pocky. Okay. And since you got stuff to do, why don't you take us out, sir? Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Good night, everybody. And thanks for listening.